Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Game of Your Life, the podcast that celebrates all things nerdy, nostalgic, and most importantly, my favorite medium, video games. This week, we've got the co-host of the Pottervision podcast. It's Tom Lawrenson. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jordan. Excellent to be here. Brilliant. Lovely.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad to have you on, dude, because to be honest, you were one of the first inspirations I had to do this show, because I saw you and Lucas were sort of making the best of this lockdown situation. You would start a podcast about a thing you love, and I assume you're enjoying doing it.
That's great. You're not the first person to say that. Like, you're like the third person to say, you've made me start a podcast. It's like, we'd like more listeners, but cool, sure.
Yeah, you really should get all the people that you've inspired to, like, co-sign your podcast and then build it out that way, like a pyramid scheme almost. Like,
Yeah.
But no, right. I'm enjoying doing it just as a way to pass the time, but also, like, you forget that it's social interaction is good. So, like, I was seeing people for that weird 3-month period where we weren't locked down, and that sort of, like, recharged me for a bit. But then this last lockdown since November has been so brutal, and this has been my only, like, respite of seeing people. So it's been appreciated.
Yeah, I've kind of just, like, accepted that this is life now forever. Do you know when they're saying, oh, we're going to lift restrictions? I don't really believe it. I just kind of think, you know, now we're all just prisoners in our own homes.
Yeah, it's sort of a believe it when I see it. Like, I have people at work asking when I'm going to go back to Canada and shit. And I'm like, maybe October? Like, if things are okay by then. I felt bad because I was basically putting my girlfriend to work as, like, a podcast editor. Because she's just really good with this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I know. I get my sister to listen to the podcast, and she tells me which bits I need to cut out. She'd be like, "Yeah, you can't say, don't say that word." just like as a vetting thing, you know, like, because you realize, yeah, I guess people don't like jokes about that topic. Like, you forget other people are going
to listen. I've noticed that too, because, like, I was talking to Evaldus last episode about, like, Lithuania having the highest suicide rates. And the whole time we were like, that's sort of hilarious. I wonder if people are ever like, oh, we got to contribute in some way. And, like, you have these fucked up conversations, and then, like, as soon as the recording ends, you're almost like, oh, I don't know if I should have said any of that.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I'll say things just to shock Lucas, because, like, he's got a really busy schedule. So, like, I'll notice the podcast, the episode's been a bit flat, and so I'll, like, write something on my hand, or I'll make an awful joke that I know is not going to go in the podcast, but will wake him up. And then, but then that's just more work for me later when I'm having to edit.
That's hilarious.
It.
You know, I've heard, I was just listening to the Sopranos podcast. Are you a Sopranos guy at all?
I've seen everything but the last
season. Oh, crazy. Wow. You've got that. Are you just saving it for the perfect lockdown, like... That's the final precipice.
I don't know. I just kind of I think because I binge them, and then at the end I'm just like, oh, I get sick of it. Like, I did the same with Game of Thrones. I've not seen the last season of Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, well, you lucked out there because it was dog shit. So just remember it how you have it in your head.
Oh well, yeah. Maybe I can solve it. Yeah, like, as you said, perfect ending.
But no, I was watching that, and the guy was saying, like, he had to crack, it's Steve Chirippa, one of the actors, Bobby Bacala, and he was saying in one of the scenes he had to crack up James Gandolfini, but they were there at, like, 6 a.m. outside in the cold, so he had no way to do it. So he just brought this giant dildo in and, like, kept it under his jacket, didn't tell anyone, until the moment that he came on screen and saw him, and then, like, pulled it out and started shaking it around. And just, like, got James to crack up. That sort of reminded me of what you just said. It's like, it's more about the other person laughing than what actually makes them laugh. That sort of makes the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. God, but that's hilarious that he had to go to a shop and buy that.
Yeah. Now, just imagine this, like, 300-pound Italian guy, like, shopping for dildos.
I know. Or he sent someone to get it.
A PA.
And then saying, oh, yeah, I need it for filming. And then no one ever sees it in the show. And they're like, yeah, right, buddy.
Right. I didn't even think of that. But, man, so, yeah, you've been doing this Harry Potter thing for a while. You guys were doing something before that, right? Like, before it was a podcast, Pottervision was sort of a... what was it before that?
It's a live show. We've been doing it for, like, 4 or 5 years or something. We recreate the first film in, like, an hour, just two of us.
Oh, that's hilarious.
but like it's a bit of a it's like I don't know if you've seen both of us perform. You know, you've seen me, but have you seen Lucas on stage?
Yeah.
Before?
Oh, man. I've only seen him once or twice, but he does that song. He's an old lady with the head of a baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I saw him do that once, like a year and a half ago, and me and my girlfriend will still quote it because it's just like, it's like an earworm that'll just get stuck in our heads. I meant to tell him that.
So, the show is kind of like, you know, a blend of both of our sense of humor, like added, you know, and then times that by Harry Potter. And so it's like a weird, lighthearted, dark, like silly
show. Oh,
that's
awesome, man. It's funny because I'm pretty sure I heard of Potter Vision before I ever met you or him. It was like...
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, I think it was just a thing that was going on when I moved to the city. I was like, oh, I should check that. Because I grew up as like a diehard Harry Potter kid.
Yeah, I think the books were amazing. And then them films... Well, really, I think because it was kids. When you're a kid, you love seeing kids in films, and then it stays with you.
It was much like the books, because I found in the books I was sort of aging as the books aged up, because, like, the first couple are kids' books, clearly, and then, like, 6 and 7, it's, like, some dark, heavy shit is going on. And it sort of had the same thing in the movies, where, like, yeah, when I watched the first one, I looked young like that, and by the time the last one came out, I was also an adult, like, getting out of high school, so... Yeah, I always wonder if other generations would be able to get into it if they didn't have that sort of custom, like, aging along with the characters thing.
Well, you think, but, I mean, I feel like it's just never-ending, really, because people our age are now having kids. Well, some people our age had kids 10 years ago, but, like, that are now introducing, you know, these books to them kids, and that's, like... Mm-hmm. So it's like starting all over again. We've had some reviews, like some 10-year-old in Germany being like, I've listened to your podcast each episode 8 times. And it's like, that's crazy.
Yeah, you gotta love that fandom.
8-year-old, like, she must have read all the books and now's listening to that podcast. It's crazy.
And that's probably why your sister's like, yeah, you can't say these words on the show. There's 8-year-olds listening. But as a crossover, did you have any interest in that Harry Potter video game coming out soon? Did you hear about this at all?
No. Is it like an online? Is it like a PC thing?
It's like, for me, because I've been a video game fan longer than a Harry Potter fan, and I always thought this would be the perfect idea for a game. It's like, I think set way before the times of the events of Harry Potter, but you're just like a wizard going to Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And you sort of, I think you make your own character, and it's basically like a Skyrim style, like open world at Hogwarts, but you're a wizard and you can sort of choose what, if you want to be good at potions or dark arts or whatever, like, you know, make your own thing as if you were going to Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's like a can't miss premise almost if they just fucking nail it.
Seems like the perfect, like, yeah, you know, that's what, if you're going to make a game, that's what it should be about, if it's Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember, I think Dragon Ball Z, they eventually did, like, Dragon Ball Online or something that was, like, really, like, massive and hyped up, where, like, you design your own character. And then, yeah, I remember being excited for it to come out, but then I got to an age where, when it eventually came out, I was past that. I was like... No, I can't play Dragon Ball Z games anymore.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like it just... Yeah, the moment sort of passes. Like, this Harry Potter game was set to come out in February, and then the whole Cyberpunk thing happened where that game came out and they basically released it before it was finished, and now, like, people are suing them and shit, and they're having to recall the game. So I think the people making the Harry Potter game were like, oh, fuck, like, our game's pretty much not finished yet. And we want to avoid this whole, like, hellstorm happening to us. So now that game's being delayed till, like, next year. Which, for better or worse, I mean, if it lets them finish it and get, like, a better product out there, I don't mind, but...
Well, that's like, the worst thing about modern consoles, like, that they can just release unfinished games. Like, when, you know, N64 games came out, that was it. You can't recall it. If it's out, it's out. There's no updates. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah, there's no side slot on the cart to put like a separate cartridge of new game data. Like, and the crazy thing is they got away with that. It's like, if they wanted to make more Donkey Kong, for instance, they'd have to make Donkey Kong 2. They wouldn't be able to, like, well, here's some more of that game you liked. It's only going to be $20 extra or whatever.
Yeah, it's a rip off. I think the only expansions packs I've ever bought It's probably like Mario Kart on the Wii U.
The characters?
Yeah, you get extra tracks and characters. So I was like, yeah, I'll take them. Go on and give me Link.
Yeah, it almost is. In games like that, though, because each generation, they'll release like a new Mario Kart, a new Smash Bros., and then the content sort of is more valuable because it's just expanding what the game is already. As opposed to, like we said with DLC, it feels like sometimes they'll release 80% of a game and then resell you the extra 20%. And it's like, fuck off. Just like, yes. Hey, I bought this already.
I know. So
what's your gaming history like? Are you much of a gamer, or like, did you fall off at some point?
I don't think I don't game as much as I used to. I think I feel a bit guilty about it. But like, I'm probably like mainly a Nintendo person. Whatever Nintendo puts out, I'm gonna buy. You know, as soon as that new Mario comes out, I have to have the new Mario.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way, man. I was raised on Nintendo. Like, I remember my dad brought home a Super Nintendo one day. Just like when I wasn't even expecting it, and part of it was because him and my mom were both working, and basically like the Nintendo became the babysitter for a bit. So my earliest memories in life are like learning Mario Kart and like Donkey Kong 1 and shit like that.
But yeah, Nintendo, I think, yeah, I mean, I could tell you the list of all the consoles I've had, but it's just most of them really. But my favorite ones has always been Nintendo 64 and then GameCube. Like, I always preferred them to anything else, even though I had
ones. So that was like your peak, I'd say, like late 90s, early 2000s era ish.
Yeah. And then Wii, and then Wii U, and then now the Switch.
Yeah, I feel bad for anyone who the Wii U squeezed money out of, because that was such a like.
Yeah,
that,
me.
That felt like the DLC of consoles. Like, they were like, oh, you like the Wii? Well, we've got this Wii U here, and it's like. Basically the same thing, but a bit nicer.
Well, the graphics were better. And then they released loads of really good games on them, but because no one bought them, because no one knew what a Wii U was, now they've just re-released them for the Switch. And I'm like, I can't buy those again. That is crazy for me to buy them again.
That's so true. That Donkey Kong, I believe Tropical Freeze was a Wii U release, and that game fucking rules.
Yeah,
like, yeah, and there's a bunch. But no, I'm glad that you got that. History with it, because this game was big for me. In fact, why don't we just get right into it? I got like so many notes on Donkey Kong here. We'll take a quick break and get into it. Tom Lawrence, and this is The Game of Your Life. Here we go. The finally here. Performance for you. If you know the words, you can join in too. Put your hands together if you want to clap. As we chase your groove, this monkey rap. Donkey Kong 64, developed in 1999 by Rare Software and published by Nintendo. It's an action-adventure 3D game that marks the first time we see the Donkey Kong crew in a 3D world. 2.3 million units were sold of this game, and it was considered a huge success at the time. Tom Morrison, what made you choose this one? Why is this the game of your life?
I love Donkey Kong 64, and I've got a lot of good memories about it. Like, it was only until recently that I realized people didn't like this game. I thought, yeah, this is one of the best games ever created. Like, I went in there completely, like, not on reviews. Because when you're a kid, well, like, I don't know about you, but I'd get, like, two Nintendo games a year. One for Christmas, one for birthday. And then right. So, like, you choose it based on nothing. You see an advert and go, I guess that'll be my game. And then I always chose well. I chose Donkey Kong. And then... Yeah, it's so big. So much is going on in that game. It's like, I feel like it's bigger than Banjo-Kazooie in terms of similar format.
I know
like,
it was because this was the first game ever on N64. It came with an expansion pack that you had to plug into the front of your Nintendo because they were like, the games we're making have officially outgrown the system they're on. And like the system can't take how big this game is.
That was so satisfying, clicking out the old expansion, like the old whatever was in the memory, and then putting in the big one. That was
I remember just as a kid, I mean, knowing nothing about technology, it felt like a big deal. Because I'm like, wow, it's like the version the first time you saw Final Fantasy VII with like three discs. And you're like, this game can't be contained to one disc. This is unbelievable. It's the exact same feeling. I'm like, there's so much content on this cartridge.
I don't know what it's like, extra satisfaction that's like, oh, I have to change my machine so I can play this.
And it was a banana, a banana yellow cartridge too, which I remember loving.
Mine really? Wasn't. Mine, I know, when you Google it, they're all yellow. Mine's gray. Oh man, gray.
I would have been gutted.
I didn't know about the yellow cartridge until like, later on. I was like, oh my god, I've been conned. I could have had glorious
ignorance
yellow.
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah, well, my quick story with this game is it came out when I was still renting games from, like, Rogers Video in Canada. I don't know what your rental places would be here, but I got it for 3 days on a 3-day weekend, and it was, like, 2 weeks before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost beat the game. I remember I just played the shit out of it, like, for 3 days straight, nonstop. And then we had to give it back, and I was so choked, because I'm like, well, if I ever do get this game, I'm never going to, you know, I'm going to have to do all that shit I just did again. And it turns out what my dad did is, like, an awesome dad move, is instead of dropping it off, he just offered to buy it, the copy, straight up from Rogers, knowing that, like, my save file was on that cartridge. And then for Christmas, he, like, gave it to me and revealed that. And I was like, oh, shit, like, it's already there.
That's
sick. That was, like, it's like a top two or three Christmas gift moment. My dad fucking nailed it that year.
Our rental place, in Blackpool, was a small place. They only had two stores. It was called Eclipse, like, video game rentals and stuff. And, like, and I remember renting the South Park game. Did you play that?
Is that the racing one or trivia one?
No, it's the one where you're shooting turkeys.
I think I've watched friends play it, but I'm not too familiar.
Like, that's a bad game, but as a kid, like, really, I was loving it. I thought it was amazing, because they were swearing and stuff. But what Eclipse did, they put a sticker on the front of the game if this one is one that you could buy as well as rent. Yeah. But I peeled off the sticker being a little twerp, and then when I went to return it and be like, oh, I'd like to buy this. They were like, yeah, this one's not for sale.
No. But you did that.
But it was so cheap to buy. I shot myself in the foot.
Man, but no, when you got it, was it just like game changer to you? Had you played the original ones on Super Nintendo, like Donkey Kong 1, 2, or 3?
No. So when I got Donkey Kong for Christmas, and yeah, just like blown away by it. I don't know, because I was living in Spain at the time. Like, me and my parents, like, they moved everyone to Spain to open a bar. I think that's, like, a bit of an English dream. And we did that for 3 years. Basically, I'd get the video game, and then everyone would play on it. So that was my gift for everyone, kind of. My sisters would get their own gifts for Christmas, and then, yeah, we'd all sit around and play my Railroad games.
No, but then I'm wondering, did you have any Donkey Kong nostalgia in your heart when you opened it, or what drew you to Donkey Kong, if you didn't have those originals?
I think this might have been my first, like, Donkey Kong encounter. Right. Because I didn't have Mario Kart, I had Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh, right.
And he's not. So maybe I was like, oh, I like Diddy Kong. Maybe his brother's probably cool. Or maybe I bought it because Diddy Kong was in it. That'd be a weird person.
Oh, yeah, you're a Diddy fan. Well, it would make sense, though, because widely considered the best Donkey Kong in the trilogy is Donkey Kong Country 2, which is actually Diddy Kong and Dixie Kong. And I think that's why you brought up earlier that DK64 gets a lot of hate. And I disagree with the hate. I actually do like this game more than most people, but I think the reason it gets that hate is because the original trilogy was such a success, and it was a success as, like, a side-scrolling platformer. Like, it was not a 3D action-adventure. Like, this game was a complete departure from what made Donkey Kong popular.
That is a great way to look at it, because I'd gone in cold completely, never playing the other Donkey Kongs. And then, like, having played this, I was just like, oh, this is a great standalone game. It's got, once you've completed a world, you go in with another character and have their take on the world. Like, each world had to be played, like, five times.
Yeah, and it's like a collect-a-thon, first and foremost. And a lot of people don't like that in games, but I'll always have that, like, it's almost like social media brain, the instant satisfaction of, like, getting all 100 colored bananas or getting all 10 golden bananas. Like, I love that shit.
so satisfying clicking through, like flashing through the screens and looking at each world and being like, perfect, perfect, perfect.
Yeah. Even the secret fairy on each level. Got it.
But I wonder if these people who've like, I don't know, never played Banjo-Kazooie and then bought Nuts and Bolts and was like, this game rules.
There's got to be a few of those, right? I'm trying to think. I must even have one of those examples where like, I played the shitty, what everyone considers the shitty sequel or the redheaded stepchild of the... But I don't know. Yeah. DK64, I loved it in spite of all those. I just looked at it as a different thing. Like, for me, Nintendo 64 was like, we've gone 3D now. Like, there was no place for side-scrollers anymore. Why would you even do that if you could be 3D? Like, the same way Mario 64 was such a wildly different take than the Super Nintendo versions.
Yeah. I think my first side-scroller was Sonic. And then from Sonic going into, like, you know, N64, where everything was, like, you know, open world, kind of, like, you know, 3D platformer, I didn't have any, like, I was not missing 2D side-scrollers whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So then, like, I feel like when the Wii came out, and then around that era in the 2000s, side-scrollers kind of came back, because people were making their own side-scrollers, and people had, like, a lot of nostalgia for them. So, like, I had to get into them, like, for instance, when Donkey Kong Country Returns came out, I was like, it's a side-scroller.
Yeah, right?
Where's the 3D world?
That's so funny. You must have been one of the only guys who's like, what is this? Where's Lanky Kong, for fuck's sakes?
Yeah. But, like, I kind of think, because when you're doing a side-scroller, it's, like, it's a lot more intense, because... when you're in a 3D world, there's no time limits, really. You're just, like, chilling out. But side-scrollers, a lot of time,
you can only do so much in a side-scroller, so they and end up constraining sort of what the game is in general. Like, I don't know, it's tougher. It is more constrictive, but I find it's way more difficult for that reason, too. Like, Donkey Kong Country 2 is one of the hardest games I've ever played still. Like, it really holds up, so... whereas 64, I don't know if I consider it a tough game. There's some really tough boss battles that I remember, but I'm not playing it for the difficulty or anything. It's sort of like a different thing.
But, like, it's mad to me that, you know, people can be against Donkey Kong 64, because, like, not only is it, like, a fun game, but it's, like, really, like, so dramatic and stuff. You know, when the bosses come out, you don't get that in side-scrollers. Each boss has, like, an intro where they come out, and it's all dramatic and crazy.
I totally agree. Like, a dramatic cutscene in... the Donkey Kong Country original side-scrollers were literally like, your Donkey Kong walks in side screen and receives some bad news and then like walks out of the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can only do so much drama. We're cut to Donkey Kong 64 and it's got like an opening video of like, you see King K. Rool show up in that like giant alligator-shaped boat and start like fucking up everything. It's got way more of a narrative. And that actually brings me into... when I'm breaking these games down, I like to do it by sections, just to really get into it. And the first one I always look at is the story of the game and the characters in the game. The story, I mean, it's basically tale as old as time when it comes to Nintendo. Like I said, Donkey Kong is sleeping as per usual, because this is exactly how the Super Nintendo games go, by the way. Like, he slept in too late. And while he was sleeping, King K. Rool manages to show up and, like, steal everything that makes his life worth living. Like,
all his bananas. His golden
bananas. More importantly than his friends being kidnapped, his hoard of golden bananas is gone.
No sympathy for him. Why is this man hoarding wealth?
No, he is the 1%.
Just a stack
of them. He's the king of the jungle there. Like, he is on top with his mountain of gold bananas. But it's funny because, in this one, you just start as Donkey Kong alone. All of his friends have been, like, locked up in cages. And it shows that to you at the beginning in these cutscenes. Which is great. I think the new characters in this, as far as party members, Tiny Kong, Lanky Kong, and Chunky Kong had never been introduced to the series before. Which is weird to me, because Donkey Kong Country 3 was Dixie Kong and this kid, Kitty Kong. Who, I remember when I was a kid and I first played Donkey Kong 64, I almost thought Kitty Kong had grown up and, like, become Chunky Kong. Because Chunky Kong sort of looked like an adolescent and he was sort of dressed like a school kid. Right. But,
Well, Well, yeah, there's one thing that, like, the family tree of the Kongs is really messed up and confusing. Like, because isn't Cranky Kong the original Donkey Kong? And isn't the Donkey Kong that we know Donkey Kong Jr.?
Cranky Kong's always been there. Since, like, the first shot of Donkey Kong Country 1, he's playing an old, like, gramophone. And then Donkey Kong busts in with a boombox and, like, kicks him out.
But is he not the Donkey Kong that took on Mario back in the 70s?
I never heard that. I love that as a theory, if that's true.
I think I've either heard that or I've definitely made it up, one of the others.
They might have even alluded to that in DK64, because Cranky Kong's in Donkey Kong 64, and he's almost like playing a mad scientist at this point. He's the one you'll go to like learn your new moves and shit like that. But at one point, you have to actually play that original Donkey Kong arcade game, like, to get to the next level or get a key or something like that. Like, it's mandatory gaming that you have to get a certain score at, like, the original Donkey Kong.
But, yeah, I think those characters that they introduced for Donkey Kong 64, they're completely, like, Rareware, you know, characters. I don't even know, after they ditched Rareware for, like, you know, doing the series, have... Lanky, Chunky, and Tiny made appearances anywhere?
No.
Or have they gone back?
Gone. Although I've always thought Lanky Kong should last the test of time just for being such an awesome... I thought he was so dope when I first played it. Like, he's an orangutan for one.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't match any of the other Kongs in the game.
He walked on his hands. Amazing.
Yeah, he did, like... When he was flying, he'd use his own arms as, like, skip ropes and, like, to fly through the air.
Yes. And he'd inflate himself just like a balloon.
Yeah. No, he was awesome. I love Lanky Kong. The other two I didn't care for because, like I said, I thought there were better versions. Like, there was no need for a Tiny Kong when you have Dixie Kong. Like, both of them are small female Kongs that fly with their hair. I didn't understand the need for a new one. I was bugged by it.
Did you not think there's a need for a Chunky
Kong? No, with Kitty Kong. But, I mean, like... That archetype of a big Kong who can smash and do all the moves he does was necessary. I just would have gone with Key.
Maybe it was a different personality because Chunky Kong is such a shy, timid beast. He didn't enjoy being in his massive body.
He was self-conscious.
Yeah.
But it's funny because they have a whole cast of characters. They bring back like Candy Kong and Funky Kong were both from the original Super Nintendo games. Although, it's weird, Funky Kong used to be like a travel agent, essentially. Like, you'd go to him to travel between worlds in the Super Nintendo. But in...
Do you remember the Donkey Kong, like, animated TV series?
Yeah, 100%. I used to love that.
Because I know Funky Kong was on that, and maybe Candy as well, and Cranky, and Diddy. So they were on that. Maybe that was my first...
Yeah, that was a really popular show in Canada for, like, a few years.
Was it a Canadian-made show?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so, because Nintendo doesn't usually lend out its properties too willy-nilly. But Funky, he was, like, to me, it was weird, because he's always been, like, a hippie. Like, he seems like a pothead. Like, in 2021, he'd be a pothead. But in DK64, he's, like, full military fatigue. He's, like,
yes!
like a commando. Like, Funky is where you go to get your guns in Donkey Kong 64.
That's crazy. Maybe that was, like, the joke of it. Like, oh, I've got a hippie who's selling, you know, military gear.
Yeah, and it's hilarious. I love that you have guns in this game, because that's, like, was never a thing in any other game. They just added, like, a shooter aspect to the game, which I thought worked. And then, yeah, past that, I mean, there were so many weird characters in this. I was looking up the game today. There was poor... Do you remember the ghost, Wrinkly Kong? Like... She would give you advice.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I'm assuming that was like Cranky's like widow.
Wife?
Or the opposite. Yeah. Like he was a widower and that was his dead wife.
Sad thing to include in a game. You can just imagine like, you know, the meetings they had when they were like developing the game. What if we kill Cranky's wife? What? Like, why don't we have Tiny Kong? Nah, like, you know.
Yeah.
Just creating characters unnecessarily.
Yeah, these are all important decisions. Moving on to the next pillar of the game, I like to talk about the gameplay. And I always, the first question I have is this a fun game to play? From what I remember, I always had fun actually, like, physically playing this game.
Definitely. There were so many things, like, you could do in this game, like, completely different. Like, even if you didn't want to play the story, you could just, like, be a dolphin and go through hoops for, like, an infinite amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the multiplayer being really fun, too, if you just had a few friends over.
Oh, absolutely.
The, like, arena where you're shooting each other and shit. It's basically the same as Mario Kart, mm-hmm. except you're not in a kart. You're running around with your guns. Mm-hmm. But no, I always thought it was... And I thought it was very smooth, too, because with this one, they always, like, are throwing new moves at you throughout the game. Like, up until the final few levels, you're learning new shit. And I felt it all sort of blended together well. It never felt clunky.
That's the... Yeah, there's something great about a video game level when there's stuff that you can't use yet. Like, if you take Banjo-Kazooie, if you take that first level, you can complete that in, like, you know, half an hour or something, the first level, and then that's done. In, like, Donkey Kong 64 in the first level, you have to keep going back. Like, you don't just get to do it and then you're done. Like, you learn things later on in the game. It's like, now I can go back and get that final banana.
Yeah, you'll see emblems that you have to shoot, like, with a grape or a pineapple, and you won't get that. You won't get those guns or even those characters to, like, four levels later. Like, you're amazing. Required to go back, you know, almost. It is, like, a part of the game they expect you to do. And included in that, do you remember the rat guy that has, like, you're collecting blueprints for him throughout the game?
Yes!
There's, like, every level has, like, a big badass, like, blue crocodile guy, and you can indicate whose blueprint they have based on their hair color. So, like, if they have green hair, it's, like, a chunky blueprint, or if it's orange, it's lanky, and so on. And I never ended up getting them all. I always wondered what would happen if you got every blueprint in that game.
Yeah, I never completed this game.
You never beat it full stop or never 100%ed it?
No, I did not get... I got to, like... I was in the final building, but I didn't know what to do there. Like, I never got to fight King K.
Oh, yeah, and it gets very tough in that whole last level. It's, like, frustratingly tough, I remember.
I think I might watch someone play it on YouTube, just like, well, I'm never going to do it. I think Chunky Kong was the last player you got, wasn't it? He was the last one that you released. And so I was watching... I was watching some, I think I was watching Hollyoaks once or Coronation Street or something, one of those soaps. And there was a little boy playing Donkey Kong 64 in the game, like in the program. And I was watching it like, wow, that kid's playing Donkey Kong 64. And this woman who was his like dad's girlfriend or something, like sat down next to him and she goes, wow, what you've got to do is you've got to shoot that skull in both of its eyes with pineapples. And I remember thinking, bullshit, this woman has put 20 hours into Donkey Kong 64. Do you know what I mean?
I can't imagine it happening.
That was too far into the game for that woman to know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, and not because she's a woman, just because no adult would be playing Donkey Kong 64.
No, I mean, my mom would always try to play games with us just to, you know, to play with the kids and shit. And it would become so embarrassing for her. Like, I remember, like, as an 8-year-old, like, just trouncing her in Mario Kart and having to tell her, like, you're driving the wrong way, Mom. Like, you're not even going the right way down the course.
Oh, my mom's the opposite. My mom plays video games to this day.
Really?
Yeah, she's got my old Wii U, and she just, at the minute, she keeps playing Tropical Freeze over and over again.
That's hilarious. Like,
she doesn't want a Switch. So she just keeps playing on the Wii U, and like I've run out of Wii U games to give her, of like, because she only wants to play the official Nintendo ones.
I
can
see that.
Like, so she's done Yoshi, she's done, like, you know, Mario, and I bought her like the Spyro game, and I was like, hey, got you that? And she was like, nah, rubbish. I'm like, well, great, enjoy playing Donkey Kong.
It's
for the
funny
rest
because
of your life.
Spyro essentially is just like a collectathon too that isn't as good as DK64, I think. There's a ton of... Do you remember the mini games in this game? Either, like, they'd be racing games, or just when you jumped into barrels, there'd be, like, mini game barrels. And I found sometimes they were really fun, and sometimes they were so impossibly tough that I just never beat them.
They were such, like, an assortment. They were amazing. Like, there was ones where, I don't know, I guess you'd go around in the dark, like, you know, and try not to get caught
by... It's like a maze.
But, and then all those... There was, like, specific like mini games to specific people as well, because like Tiny would go small, and then in the Aztec level you'd shrink down and race a spider down
right
the slide.
Yeah, because in every level I'm pretty sure every Kong had 5 golden bananas, so each mini game was specific to the person because that was only their gold banana in that level. So which brings me to, if I had one big criticism about the gameplay in this game, and it's honestly like if they were to re-release this game I think they could fix it pretty easy, is just instead of having to find one of those barrel hubs to switch your characters, just like being able to switch your character on the spot wherever you are. Because the amount of times I would just travel to some like corner of some level, not even remember where I got there, and then there's like a single blue banana that I can't pick up. And I'm like, I have to backtrack and fucking find my way up here as the right Kong.
I don't think I ever minded that as a kid, like, because I sucked at this game. I think I was bad at the game, right. But I just loved the experience of it, because you'd spend 20 minutes walking somewhere, and I'd be like, guess I got to walk back, and then walk back with the right character. But then the music was so good.
Oh, man, well, that brings me right into the next thing I was talking about. The third pillar of this game is the sound and the graphics. And, I mean, if we're going to talk music and Donkey Kong 64, we got to start with the DK rap right off the top. I remember, dude, turning this game on for the first time, fully not knowing what to expect, and then seeing that DK rap start to finish is, like, a moment I won't forget in gaming. I was like, what the fuck is this?
That... Normally, when you turn a game on, it'll go to the start screen, and then if you don't do anything, just demo gameplay will start playing. Yeah, so like most of the time, you'll just immediately, as soon as you turn the game on, press start, so you don't have to watch any of that. There's no game in history more than this one that I will just watch or a rap the whole way through every time I turn it on.
Yeah, because it is like such a funny introduction. Like, it literally, they've got an intro for all 5 Kongs, and then, like, a Cranky Kong breakdown at the end, like a DJ mix. I was listening to it before we recorded. It's the best, dude.
Yeah.
But
great lyrics. Really, really funny. Like, you might think it's... some people might think it's, like, cringe or whatever, but I think it's a lot of fun. Like, the Lanky Kong verse, hilarious. He has no style. He has no grace. This Kong has a funny face. Great.
Damn, I'm shocked you remembered that.
No, got a lot of it memorized. There's a guy on, I don't know, maybe it's an assortment of people, but there's someone who takes the Donkey Kong rap, and he takes all the lyrics from it and will make it into different songs.
That sounds awesome.
Somehow making it into Hallelujah, you know, that the Shrek song, or What's New. What's New, Pussycat, you know, the Tom Jones.
Oh, song. Yeah.
So it's like, What's New, Donkey Kong? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's great, dude.
Better to listen to than my impression.
I should throw one of those at the end of this episode.
Definitely.
But yeah, no, I thought the music, honestly, because the music from the original Donkey Kong soundtracks is, in my opinion, if not still the best music ever from any video games. Like, at that point when this game came out, there was nothing better. Like, the Donkey Kong first 3 soundtracks are, like, the elite level. And although they took some from that, they took some songs in this, a lot of them just sounded like the Donkey Kong 64 soundtrack and the Banjo-Kazooie soundtrack are, like, interchangeable to me. Like, they're very similar.
Yeah, very similar. It's the same guy.
Yeah, a lot of the same team. It's funny because people will compare them and contrast these games, but like, I'm sure the people who made them love both of them the same. Like, they're two children or whatever.
Yeah, I think. Well, I'm to me, even though they're very similar games, I'm like, Banjo Kazooie and Donkey Kong, drastically different games. Oh, you couldn't get more different games. Like, because I notice all the little tiny differences. But yeah. Was it the same team who did the original Donkey Kong Country series as DK64?
I'm not sure. I didn't see that online when I looked. It specifically said the same as Banjo. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is Rare. Like, Rare developed all these. Mm-hmm. So, and in my opinion, dude, Rare in the 90s, like, could not fucking miss. Between the DK trilogy, GoldenEye, like, Jet Force Gemini, the Banjo series, like, there's so much gold there. Yeah, Conquer, Perfect Dark. But so I imagine it would, yeah. And then as soon as quick as they came, they just left. But you got to imagine a lot of the same people are on that team. It's also only like 3 years different, like 3-4 years difference. Like Donkey Kong 64 came out in 99, which sort of blew my mind when I read that. And then wow. I thought the graphics, as far as graphics went, it held up as good as anything else from that time period. Like, looked as good as Mario 64.
Better. I always thought Nintendo games, even like, especially Rareware games, like, you think of Mario 64, look better than other, like, games on, say, you look at PS1.
Oh, for sure.
I was shocked, because I didn't have a PS1 initially. When I'd, like, see PS1 games, I'd be like, that sucks.
Yeah, I remember watching my friend play Duke Nukem. And we were, like, excited because you get to go to the strip club in that game. And then when you see the actual strippers, they're, like, 2D images in this 3D world. So, like, if you look at them from the side, it's, like, paper. And we're like, what the fuck? What is this? Whereas in DK, like, this game, yeah, there was, like I said, nothing like it at the time. I mean, you needed an expansion just to play it.
But I remember my friend, going around to my friend, and he had a GTA Grand Theft Auto 1. And that is from a bird's eye view. And I remember thinking, what the fuck? That sucks. Where's the 3D ape?
Yeah, like, how can you care when you're just a dot in this, like, map top world?
But it's the same case now. Like, all video games more or less cost the same amount. Like, actually, N64 games back in the day were £50, which is what video games
That's
are
never
now.
Really changed. They've gone up in maybe, like, £5 increments or whatever, but... Like, new systems are pretty much always £500, and new games are pretty much always, like, what they are. And then they'll just devalue as newer shit comes out.
But when games come out, no matter what the quality, they all cost the same. The fact that, like, say, GoldenEye will cost the same as Blues Brothers 2000, the video game.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
And it's like, how dare you? You are not a £50
That's what
game.
I've loved. Actually, the Switch has sort of changed that to a degree. Because indie developers will just release their game online at the Switch. They won't even do hard copies. And they sort of realize, like, look, this is 10 to 15 hours of really fun gameplay. That's not going to compare to, like, fucking a Cyberpunk or whatever. So instead of £70, this will just be £15. And it's like, well, that's totally reasonable. But at this time, I mean, Nintendo... Like you said, they're such A-tier franchise, like, everything was such quality for Nintendo games, especially your Marios and your Donkey Kongs and your Zeldas, that just those names alone had already established by this point. It's, like, gonna be worth whatever the top price is. Like, I feel like, just with Mario 64, I feel like they bought so much goodwill with their fans. It was, like, fucking anything. Like, any of your properties I'm gonna buy now.
Yeah. They could release a Mario game for £100 and I'll go.
It will rule. It's like, oh, it's a Mario party? That sounds random and thrown together. But it rules.
Yeah. They've got a new Mario Golf coming out this summer, I think, and I'm like, yeah.
That will rule, probably. Or even a new...
They could release...
They're doing a new Pokemon Snap. And they're just calling it, like, new Pokemon Snap. And I'm like, yeah, taking pictures of Pokemon, I probably will get it. So the final factor, maybe the most important one, I always have trouble naming this, I don't know what to call it, but what is the it factor of Donkey Kong 64? What makes it stand out? What makes it memorable, replayable? Why, after all these years, is this the game you chose as opposed to the others?
I don't know whether it started off as like initially I liked the game just because of how big it was and how colorful it was. And it's a bit lame, but that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much in there to do, and you could always, like, I always find it liberating being able to, like, do so much in a game. Like, if you can ride an animal in a game, that is fun.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you can't do that on every game. And then it was a game that I never completed, so I feel like, you know...
There's still time.
It just felt so big.
There's still time. Sorry? You're still here.
I know I could dust off my N64, but like I think a little bit of nostalgia goes into it as well. And I think when I found out that Rare were like a British company, I was like, oh, that's cool.
I'm just like, figuring that out right now. I had no idea that was the case.
Did you not know? Rare were like a UK company, and then That's like Banjo-Kazooie is a really British game, if you notice, like all the little things in it, like the turns of phrase.
I think bottles seemed super British. the mole. But no, I never put together. That's actually interesting. I bet I'll see shit all the time now that like makes me realize.
Yeah. But as well, so that, I think I like that, like, I was quite a nationalistic little kid. I love my country and the video games it released.
Everyone knows the Kongs are British.
Yeah, but like, I think the game really had like a different personality to other games, like a real like sense of humor as well. It's a really funny game.
I mean, like we said, with the everyone's going to bring up the rap, but the rap is important because it really like set the tone for this thing. It's like, this is off the wall. This is nothing like the former games. There was nothing like comedic really about the first three games. And it was...
This game, it's similar to like, you know, you can get those Avengers games where you can play each of the guys. It's the exact same format because you can be Chunky who can grow massive. You can be Tiny, you can go tiny. You can be Lanky who can inflate himself like a balloon. I don't remember what DK's special skill was. Was it a punch or something?
I think just hitting the ground, yeah. But he also had a coconut bazooka, which was cool.
Yeah,
No, they all had powers. I forget Diddy's too, but... oh, no, he could fly.
Like the jetpack.
He had a jetpack, yeah.
What was Donkey's?
No, he played music. No, they all played music.
They all played music.
I just remembered that. Was Candy Kong, was she giving out instruments, come to think of it?
Candy was giving out instruments. DK, and Lanky must have had a saxophone.
Oh, I'm glad we remembered that.
Tiny had a triangle. Chunky had a triangle.
No, Chunky had the triangle, because I remember he'd do these stupid solos, like triangle solos.
Yeah, definitely.
Donkey Kong had the bongos, and I can't for the life of me remember what Tiny Kong had. But yeah, I was gonna, another question I had here is, do you think this, because I think Nintendo doesn't take enough risks in their modern day properties. I played Pokemon Sword and Shield recently, and it's like just an uninspired sort of hack copy of like the originals, just way less good. And do you think Donkey Kong could do this, could they pull off this sort of format game on the Switch, brand new, everything is what it is, like today? Or would people sort of, are people more just like clamoring for that side scroller?
I feel like a lot of the time they either go with something that's really safe, you know, like the release of the side scroller, or they take, because they don't seem to do just like an open world thing anymore. There has to be like some big gimmick about the whole thing. Like, you know, Galaxy, how the level's so small and you zip back and forth. And then with, Odyssey, how they got the new thing of Mario throwing his hat on people. Like, they have to like think of something like that. So they'd have to be, yeah, I don't think they'd do the same dynamic again where you can just be five different Kongs. I'd love it if they did, because I'd get into that.
Yeah, you definitely, there is room for like an open world type thing though. Like, I don't think DK needs to be confined to a side scroller. I think this game was enough of a, because like I said off the top, huge commercial success. What people will say about this game personally aside, like, this game was a big hit at the time.
Yeah. But yeah, just so much you could do in it. A funny game. Really cool.
Snapping photos of fairies, shit like that.
I don't know, did you ever play, what was it called? Ukulele.
It's weird you bring that up, because I'm playing that, like, right now. I bought it like a week ago.
So that's like, I think it's the same team.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's crazy how many things are just lifted directly from Banjo-Kazooie, and I love it.
Well, yeah, because I kind of think they realized, well, you know, Microsoft are never going to make a Banjo-Kazooie game ever again.
No, no, the closest you'll get, I mean, they just put Banjo-Kazooie into Smash Bros. Not long ago, which felt like a win. I've always wanted Lanky Kong in there, but he might be game breaking. Like how everyone would just pick Lanky every time, ruin the game. Just how powerful he is, dude. Anyway, quick question: who do you prefer, King K. Rool, or Bowser as Nintendo's top badass?
King K. Rool. He's got a lot more personality about him. He's a lot funnier.
And his theme song, The Gangplank Galleon, is one of Nintendo's best songs ever.
Yeah. Like Kim K. Rule, he's like he's kind of like you know the king in Robin Hood, like the fake king.
Yeah, I know exactly like, what you mean.
The lion sucking his thumb. He's that. It's brilliant. Where Bowser's actually a psychopath.
Yeah, he's a bad motherfucker. No, that's true. Yeah. It is weird because they are similar. So it's almost like they've made K. Rool more slapstick, just as a way to contradict Bowser, who seems more serious most of the time. I do think he's a great foil.
But I think maybe that's why saying Donkey Kong 64 and Banjo, it's like because they're British games. So compared to like they say their Japanese counterparts, they've got such a big humor, such a big thing like in them. Whereas like Mario's not a funny game.
No, never really. I mean Mario sort of can be, but I don't think he's meant to be funny.
He makes funny noises and stuff, but like there's not like jokes or anything or a Mario rap.
Yeah, unfortunately not. It's weird you bring that up because I was talking to a Canadian buddy of mine today, a comedian, about how the UK just has humor like sort of baked into the culture already in a way that Canada doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So like mm-hmm. There just seems to be more opportunity over here because comedy is taken more seriously, where in Canada it's like, well, if you want to be funny, you got to move to the States eventually. And seeing it in the video games here, I never thought of it that way, but it makes so much sense because like Conker's Bad Fur Day seems to stand out as one of the funniest games ever. But mm-hmm. Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong, like, they're all really funny games, which is, it's funny to think about.
But, yeah, it's good in a way, but sometimes it can be exhausting. A nation of people trying to be funny all the time. It's like, shut up.
Dude, I don't think I've ever performed well in Liverpool, because everyone's just would rather be funnier themselves in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And half the time they are. They'll, like, out-heckle me. I'm like, fuck, what am I doing in Liverpool?
Yeah, I'm glad I paid 12 quid for the train or whatever it is.
Yeah. Maybe that's a nice enough note to end off on, just shitting on Liverpool here, because I think we dug into this game pretty deep. I feel like we covered all the things I want to talk about. And Tom, I want to thank you for coming on and talking Donkey Kong with me.
No worries, man.
Before we go, is there anything you want to plug, anything like that?
You can check out me on social media, Tom Laurinson, it's just my name on everything, and then my podcast, the Pottervision podcast, everywhere you find podcasts.
Sick. Well, thanks again. I'm at Funny Jordan D, of course, or GOYL, that's Game of Your Life podcast on Twitter, trying to grow that out. And if you like the show, please share it out. We're trying to get more eyes and ears on this thing. And that'll be it. Tom, thanks again. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Nice one, man.